Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. This is Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. How was your Christmas?
Oh, it was great. Great. Had a very nice time.
You told us last week that you had an EV of about $15 by gambling with your brothers-in-law in some kind of Filipino card game. How did that go?
Oh, well, I lost out. I lost my EV because one brother-in-law showed up and then had to leave before the other one showed up, so we never got our card game going, but I'm sure we'll get it on New Year's Day.
Now, you're playing, with $15 EV, this is, you're playing for basically pennies, where you're used to playing for much bigger stakes. You've had gambling days when you up or down $10,000, $20,000 or more, and so now you're talking about, well, maybe I'll be ahead $15. So a lot of people have trouble going from, with that kind of stake jumps. Does that bother you at all?
No, I want to win. I don't. Even if it's only $15, I want to win. I guess that's just my competitive nature. But
so the fact that it's chicken feed money to you doesn't get in the way.
No, not at all, not at all. If it were higher stakes, uh-huh. I would probably go do a more studying of the game. I would try to find a way to improve at the game if the stakes were higher.
If you beat your wife's brothers out of a couple hundred dollars, that may end up being bad news for you at the home front anyway.
Yeah. I wouldn't play for higher stakes with them, but, if they were to, say, introduce me to their friends who like to play higher stakes, then I would make an effort to get better at the game.
But you don't need to just with them. All right. Good. All right. So there's been two separate but related bits of news this week on internet gambling. The first was from the federal government. Apparently, the day before Christmas, they announced that the Wire Act only pertains to sports betting. What did you hear about this, Richard?
Well, not much more than that. I was actually pretty shocked. And all I can guess is that the lobbying efforts that Nevada casinos have been doing to try to get internet gambling legalized, I guess the lobbying efforts are paying off. But this is great news as far as I'm concerned.
So the way I understand it from reading, a lot of it was reading I. Nelson Rose's blog on it. Rose is a frequent guest to this program. And he said that basically, there's now no federal statute against any sort of gambling other than betting on sporting events. So in terms of poker, states are free to pass laws allowing poker online.
Right. And this should pave the way for online casino gambling as well. But what I'm not clear about is how this affects the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act, which was a law really directed at the banks and credit card companies about transferring money to these entities.
That law is set to expire soon.
Oh, well, that's good.
And apparently this particular Congress is showing no interest in doing anything. They haven't this particular Congress hasn't passed many laws about anything, I wouldn't think gambling's high on their list.
Well, no, they have been dealing with very important issues, like making sure that In God We Trust is the national motto.
Okay, I don't want to get into politics here, so so let's stay away from that.
But anyway, yes, yeah, so it looks like legalized internet poker will be here very, very soon, especially in Nevada. That's the second story.
Good.
Right?
Now, Nevada has apparently been collecting, so people are applying to do intrastate gambling in Nevada. So South Point is one of the people who have applied. South Point's one of our sponsors, as has Cantor Gaming and a few of the others to produce the technology to do it. So they're going to have to find a way to make sure you're over 18 or 21, depending on how that law goes down. It could go either way on that one. And to make sure you're physically in the state, because currently, apparently, it's only intrastate rather than interstate. Is that how you understand it?
Yes, that is. But so now, here's a question. If I put a computer in your house and use a program like Go to My PC, but I'm in California, but the computer I'm playing on is in Nevada, am I breaking a law?
I certainly don't know, and you can bet that there will people who will try to press the envelope and find out, and that will affect things. Now, is also the way I understand it is if and when California passes laws to authorize intrastate gambling within California, then they're also Nevada can pass laws allowing interstate gambling from all states that allow intrastate gambling. So,
right. It seems like a big mess.
It does. It's going to take a while to sort out, but but basically, it's good news. Good things will happen. Now, the South Point, they've had a some practice software out there for a few months getting ready for this, and their initial version of the software was not up to spec. Your opinion is it was not as good as some of the online poker sites that were out there. Have you looked at it recently? Have you had a chance?
I did just a little bit. It's getting better. Now, part of the problem is this advertising. You know, prior to it being legal, they were filling the screens with these blinking advertisements and then trying to get people to join some upgraded club, you know, where you would pay to not have to look at the advertisements. Once the real money gambling starts, I'm hoping they'll just do away with the advertisements altogether. I mean, if not, I'm sure they'll lose a lot of business.
Yeah, okay, huh. Are they advertising my free video poker classes that are going to be starting next week?
You know, I did not see any ads for that. Although their software does allow video poker as well as live poker. I mean, right now it's still all for free, but I'm wondering if they will try to throw that in there as, you know, allow people to play video poker for money.
Interesting. All right, so our guest this week is a man named Daryl Purpose, who's in Blackjack Hall of Fame, who's led a wild and exciting life. Richard, why don't you tell us about him?
Well, let's see. Daryl's been playing blackjack for over 30 years. He moved to Las Vegas when he was 19 years old, too young to play legally, but started playing blackjack, and within a year was playing on the Ken Houston teams. Ken Houston called him in his books, I think, the fourth best blackjack player in the world, and was also mentioned that he was known as the fastest card counter in the world. So, Daryl, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're good. We're good. Now, Ken Houston is being a member of the Ken Houston team a badge of honor or something as this disgraceful thing you have to live with?
You know, I've gone through some different ways of looking at that over my lifetime, and currently, I'll just say it's a badge of honor. I mean, Ken wanted to be the world's most famous blackjack player, and he was.
Uh-huh.
He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
That's pretty good.
He had a segment done about him on 60 Minutes. And, you know, he lived the kind of life that he wanted to live. And he was a very good blackjack player, and he surrounded himself with great blackjack players. And so these days I'm liking it.
Well, good.
Now, did the teammates think of Ken as a really great blackjack player? I mean, was he a great blackjack player?
Well, I would say he was a fine blackjack player. You know, I think they thought of him as more of a figurehead. You know, he was the guy that got everybody together, and he had a lot of charisma and inspired a lot of people to do great things. And he was a great blackjack player. I mean, he, back in those days, you know, we didn't do much beyond counting cards, though. So, you know, when we think about the great APs of the current era, you know, the kind of things we were doing exactly back then, you know, don't completely measure up, even though we did get into a few alternate.
Well, you had the big players. We had Al Francesco as a guest on our show a few months ago. Were you involved at the same time he was with Kenny?
You know, no, I came after that, but certainly Al is just considered the guy that started it all. You know, he's the guy that went in to a casino way before anybody thought about this stuff and watched what people did with their hands and made blackjack team signals based on what he saw in the casino. And a lot of those signals we're still using today, you know, 40 years later. So
now you played with Al Francesco, though, in the 90s, right?
You know, there were a few things we were involved in. Never a lot, but, you know, I've certainly known him and consider him a friend. Maybe you remember what I did. I play with him?
Well, that ace sequence. Al Francesco put together an ace sequencing team in
course.
The 90s.
Yeah. Oh,
and
it's
yeah,
a,
you
a
did
blur.
Play on
it's
that
all a
team.
Blur.
Now, in the United States, it could be a little bit dangerous to play blackjack. You could be backroomed, and they can punch out a little bit. But you've played in some foreign countries where it is really dangerous to play blackjack or to have money. Like, I've heard stories, I don't know if they're true, about you in Moscow, about you in Sri Lanka, about you in some other places. Pick one of those stories and tell us about it.
Yeah, like, what was I thinking? You know, I was, you know, when I think back about those times, you know, I was young and I had a job to do and I didn't really consider any of the danger. And I do remember in Korea being owed some money from a little casino. They called themselves the Disabled American Veterans Club, but it was really a casino, underground casino run by the Japanese mafia. And I did a reverse auction with my friend to decide who would stay there to collect the money. And
so the loser had to stay?
Well, no. You know, it was like, you know, he would say, well, I'll stay for $500 a day out of the bank. I'll stay for $400 a day. I think, like, I stayed for, like, $200 a day and free time and waited to collect the money. We didn't even consider the danger of it. We just considered that we were using days that we, you know, might want to do something else with. But eventually I won, and I remember it actually got, you know, I'm not a violent guy or a guy that's going to have thrown very few punches in my life, but I remember it got a little physical. They grabbed my shirt and tore a button, and in the end, do you remember this, Munchkin? I finally got a call from them, and they said, we've got the money, come get it.
Huh, and I was like, sounds ominous.
Right. And exactly. And so I thought, well, who do I know in Seoul right now? And I thought of Munchkin's brother, Jake. And I called Jake and I said, Jake, listen, I'm heading to pick up this money. You don't hear me from an hour from now. You call the embassy and you get, you know, you call the cavalry. And so I was in a taxi cab when we were stuck in one of those incredible traffic jams they have in Seoul. And an hour had gone by and I was very concerned that Jake might be calling, you know.
But there was no, this was before cell phones maybe, so you couldn't.
Oh, yeah, way before cell phones. And I wasn't, you know, I thought, boy, if he does that, I'll never get my money back. And I saw that there was an American Army base there way before cell phones. And I told the taxi cab driver I just told him I'd be right back. And I got out of the car and I ran through the traffic and I ran up to the Army base and I said, I'm an American citizen. I need to make an emergency phone call. And they let me right in, and I called Jake, and I said, you know, give me another half an hour. He said, okay. Anyway, so I went and picked up the money.
Huh. I would, from the Japanese mafia. Is this the Yakuza? I don't know what the name is. Is that the name?
Yeah.
I think so.
So,
1983, you got involved with using a shuffle tracking computer. Called
right.
Thor.
Yes.
And that was a trip that we made together to England. Why don't you tell us that story?
Okay, well, you got to correct me if I get anything wrong here, but I think we ended up in you know, we signed up for a lot of the casinos over there, but they were membership things and you sometimes had to wait 3, 4, 5 days before you could get in. And we ended up in Leicester, in sort of middle England. And, you know, I remember, do you remember that we sought out information about Leicester so we could say why we had come? And we found there was a sock factory, so we pretended to be businessmen who wanted to talk to the sock factory people. That's true, isn't it? Isn't that a true story?
Yeah. Because it was the middle of February, and two Americans showing up in this little industrial town in the middle of February just seemed pretty odd.
But if you were there to negotiate buying 100,000 socks for next Christmas, that could make sense.
Right.
Okay.
At least in our minds, we thought it made sense.
Okay, so.
So we went in and we won some money there, and this was the first time, but not the last time it happened, that the casino said, well, you know, we can give you a check. And that didn't sound good to us. And we said, we'll keep the chips and we'll come back tomorrow and cash them in when you have the cash. And so before we went in, we strapped on the computer. You know, it was strapped to my ankle. And we kind of cleaned up everything, especially in the car, because we didn't really know what we were going to get into. We didn't know whether we were going to play again or whether we were going to get arrested. We just didn't know.
Cleaned up everything? I don't know what you mean by cleaned up everything.
Well, we had some different IDs, and we had some, you know, entries to other casinos, receipts from entries to other casinos, and we had some, you know, I'm sure that playing blackjack as a business was there, that kind of thing. So we just tried to make it, you know, in case they looked at the car, it would look good.
Okay.
And we had notes, too, from, you know, we had traveled across Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands before coming over to England. So we had, you know, cards. All the casinos there were private clubs, so you had a membership card, and we had notes about if the casino required us to give a passport, then obviously we used our real names. But if they didn't, we would use a fake name. And we had to write all that down in case we went back to the casino to remember what name we were using. So we took all of that stuff out of the car, and it was back in a briefcase in the hotel room.
Did you leave any, like, Argyle Socks Monthly magazines in the car just for...
nothing like that. But we walked in there, and they immediately separated us, and we each got interviewed separately by Scotland Yard.
Mm.
And
that's not as frightening as the Japanese Yakuza, but still.
Well, it wasn't any fun, really. You know, and we had we had talked about this, and there was a lot of gray area about the computer that we were using. And so we had decided that if we did get you know, pulled up, we would ask for a lawyer. And that would be our strategy, would be to not talk and ask for a lawyer. But both of us got separated, and both of us decided separately that it was okay to talk. And it turned out that turned out to be the right thing. And, you know, they asked us, you know, they just kept accusing us of being good blackjack players, to which, of course, we said, no way. No, we're not good blackjack players.
We're Argyle sock salesmen.
It turns out that Scotland Yard, after a long sort of interrogation, they followed us back and they searched our car and they searched the hotel. And the only place they didn't search was my ankles, where the computer was strapped. And towards the end of searching the hotel, you know, they looked under mattresses, they looked under the towels in the bathroom. And both Munchkin and I were aware of this briefcase that we knew had everything in it. It had these huge lithium batteries and these, all our IDs, all our records, all our scouting reports. Everything was in this suitcase. Wires, you know, backup computers. And they didn't open it. And they finally looked through everything, and they began to sort of believe our story. You know, just when they seemed about done and they hadn't looked in the briefcase, they walked over and they opened the briefcase and they looked, but they didn't see. And they closed the briefcase and said, okay, you know, you're all right. And so we were on the next ferry to Dover, I think.
I'll bet.
To France.
Now, yeah. But how much did you clean up out of this Leicester casino?
Oh, well, you know, there were smaller limits in those days. I don't think it was anything exciting, you know, in the realm of the kinds of numbers APs talk about today. Do you remember what it is?
I think it was around 20,000 pounds, but I think the place only had a 200-pound limit.
Right.
You know, so it was really the first place that we played in England on the first night, and then, you know, that night they couldn't pay us, and pretty much that was it. We were toast in all of England.
And, well, it sounds like, in addition to Thor being a useful tool, you were incredibly lucky that first night.
The edge was pretty huge.
Oh, Bob.
Yes. No, luck had nothing to do with it.
Luck is a residue of design.
Okay, good. So this, how big was your edge using Thor? Did you have a 10% edge?
Oh, I have no idea, really. We seem to win pretty consistently. But, you know, there was no way to actually, you know, there's a lot of gray area in terms of doing the math. I mean, we knew we had a big edge, and we knew it was much bigger than counting. And we knew we could play games that counters couldn't even play. And we also knew that it would not look like we were counting. So all those things are what led us to go in that direction.
Yeah, but there has to be some pretty strange-looking plays, like doubling down on a 12 or something, which could make sense if you know that there's not very many 10s still left in the deck.
Well, the thing is, most of the edge from non-random shuffling comes from bet variation. And, yeah, there were some weird plays like that, but they, you know, you didn't have to make them to have a huge edge. And, you know, when you did make them, you know, just like any other good play, you won sometimes and lost sometimes. So it wasn't like you were doubling down on hard 18 and always getting a 3.
Oh, that might look suspicious, huh?
Maya.
All right.
But I tell you, you know, I mean, I sort of retired from blackjack around 96, and then kind of came back into it around 2004, 2005, and it was pretty unbelievable the opportunities that had blossomed in that time, mostly from the fact that there are so many casinos right now, and it's such a part of our culture.
So do you play blackjack a lot now?
Well, I was playing a lot, but I just recently returned to music. So it was about 2 months ago. I had an adventure in Europe, and I did a thing over there that got me a lot of notoriety.
Can you tell us about this thing?
Well, I can tell you this. I can tell you that it was in a very elite casino over there.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I on this particular game, it was the most money ever won on a single hand in this particular game. And that 2 days later, Munchkin, who did not know that I was doing this over there, called me and said, "Hey, I heard somebody did this over there," because he had heard from his surveillance friend in Asia or something. So it was being talked about a lot, and it just seemed like, you know, for that reason and many other reasons, like it might be a good time to step away and start performing again.
Uh-huh. So the name Daryl Purpose, is that pretty well...
Along with my aliases, pretty well smoked, yeah.
Pretty well smoked.
But I have to say, it has been for 30 years, and it never prevented you from winning a lot of money, you know, you were, like, flyered all over by Griffin 30 years ago, and, you know, obviously it hasn't prevented you from making money when you wanted to.
Yeah, well, there's always options, for sure.
Well, if you go to DarylPurpose.com, you can see what you look like currently when you're holding a guitar. And should
yeah,
some...
but without the guitar, you wouldn't recognize me.
Ah, that could right? be. Huh? That could be. I didn't. I've never seen you without a guitar. So
that's my disguise.
That's a reverse disguise. That's interesting.
So tell us about the Moscow story.
Oh, gosh, that was so long ago. You know, just got followed. I should tell you Art's story. It's much more entertaining.
Okay.
But it's also from Moscow. No, I won't. But it's just that I was followed home by the Russian mafia, and he was chasing the taxi that I was in. And, you know, I was saying, you know, go faster, go faster.
I'll bet.
And I remember entering this, it was about 5 a.m. in the morning. We entered this big roundabout in a big city, big roundabout, you know, and there were not really many cars at that hour, but I saw a police car and I thought, great, we're safe, you know, and all the cars came screeching to a halt, the police car, my taxi, and the taxi with the four big guys from the Russian mafia. I blinked, and the police car was gone, and we were back on the road being chased by these guys. And finally, my driver stopped and turned to me and said, "Please, I have a family. Just talk to them." And the guys actually got out of the car and started walking toward me, and I don't know what I did, but I kind of screamed at the taxi driver to go, and he did. And you know, eventually it all ended. We went back to the casino where I had come from, and I don't really know why we lost him or why they stopped, you know. But
do you know why they were after you? Did they, or were the owners of the casino?
To rob me.
They didn't own the casino.
Yeah. No. No.
And you didn't actually, you don't know that they were Russian mafia. You didn't actually ask for ID or anything like that.
Well, the driver told me, and the description of the event made a lot of people there think that it was that.
Some kind of mobsters, whether it was something. Wow.
When I was in Moscow, the casino would actually drive you home with armed guards. Like, every casino would offer to take you back to your hotel with armed guards.
Wow.
So, right. That's the story I love of
Art. Not a fun place to play.
When he goes to the private investigator's office, and there's this menu of options in Russian, and it's like, blah, 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 $6, blah, 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 $10, blah, 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 $25. He says, "What's this, $6? And the guy says, that's a man to guard you. What's this? $10. That's man with gun to guard you. What's this $25 one? Oh, that's man with gun who will save your life." I just love that story. And of course, you know, Art was trying to save a few bucks, so he took one. He figured he only needed one you know, man with gun to save his life. That's all, you know, he only has one life. So, and then just the other guys, just men with guns, save a few bucks.
Well, and you're still here, so I guess it.
And I wouldn't do stuff like that ever again.
So when you get back into blackjack, which apparently you will do, are you likely to do it stateside, or is it you've done forever with that?
Honestly, I'm done. You know, I think I want to play music again, and that's where my focus is going to be. You know, it was a great this last, I guess, I don't know, it was 7 years that Munchkin kind of got me back into it. And it's a different world. There's cell phones. There's so many more casinos, and there's things that, you know, advantage players do now that we just never thought of. Way back then, you know, and people always ask me, was Ken Houston, you know, the greatest blackjack player in the world? And I would say there's a guy named Bill Earp, who I thought was the best guy that I had ever, you know, known. And my partner Craig was pretty good. But, you know, until I worked with James Grosjean, you know, I didn't really know much about great blackjack players. You know, he kind of redefined that term, you know, because not only is he the best in the world at finding a weakness in a casino, but he's the best at being creative about exploiting it. And then he's the best in the world about running the numbers to figure stuff out. And then he's the best in the world at, in the casino, getting the money. And
he never sleeps.
Yeah, that was, it was a revelation playing with him. It's a whole different world.
So Grosjean is the best player in your mind, the best blackjack player who's ever lived.
Yeah, I don't think that's like arguable. Actually, I don't think anybody could even make a case for anybody else. But that's my sense.
And actually, I think that would be true of anyone who's actually played with James. You know, people who don't know him or have never played with him obviously would argue maybe something else. But I don't know anyone who's ever played with him that would consider anyone else, you know, to be a better player.
Huh. I've heard that we've had Max Rubin on as a guest a couple times, and he has a blackjack ball every year. And so the word is, if Grosjean shows up, he's going to win the contest.
Well, he's not allowed to compete anymore.
And so then there was this guy named Munchkin who won a few times. Yeah. So then they passed the rules, so he can't do it so much anymore. So who knows?
Really? You can't play Munchkin?
No. I if I win one more time, then I'm also barred.
But the rules are stacked now against you, sort of, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they've changed the nature of the competition so that now players can eliminate other players, and so I tend to get eliminated by other players.
Because they kick out whoever they think is the most worthy competition.
they kick out whoever I think they think is their hardest competition, sure, you know, because there's money involved.
And since you've won a couple times, that they would be stupid not to kick you out, sort of.
Right.
Uh-huh. Well, good. All right. So, Daryl, we're going to let you off for a few minutes, and then we're going to do some commercials and talk about a few things, and then we're going to come back and talk about your music, and we're going to end the show by playing one of your records. I don't know if they call them records anymore, but we're going to play one. And so don't go away. We're going to we'll be back to you.
I'll be here.
All right. So, Richard, what did we learn today? Although he's a good friend of yours, so maybe you knew all these stories, but did you learn anything today?
Well, no, I guess I should be asking you, because as I said, I've known him for 30 years. So what did you learn today?
Well, actually, I might have learned more about you than I, because I didn't know you were involved in some of these things. So
I'm not a blackjack player. I just play one on the radio.
Yeah. It's like on Thor, it was a, I guess I didn't realize it was a shuffle tracking computer. I assumed it was kind of like a special card counting computer, which used a higher level of card counting expertise. And I learned tonight it was actually a shuffle tracking, which is, in shuffle tracking, presumably you have to enter in, if an 8, a 9, a 3, a 2, an ace come in that order, you have to enter those in.
Yes, yeah, and every rank, yeah.
And you don't have to say it's the 8 of hearts, but you do have to say it's an 8, or perhaps in a category of 2s, 3s, and 4s, or in one group, and 5s, 6s, and 7s in another. I don't know how you did it, but if it's strapped to his ankle, presume he's entering this with his toes?
Yes, yes, and it was quite difficult and took many, many, many hours of practice.
I'll bet. And if he gets a short fuse, he's getting a hot foot or something. And interesting. All right. So let's talk about some of our sponsors. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. Double points are going to be happening New Year's, midnight to midnight. In January, and it's also going to be happening on Martin Luther King Day, which is January 16th. Now, on New Year's, for those of you who are concerned about playing in December versus playing in January, and that can affect mailers, the first 3 hours of New Year's between midnight and 3 a.m. is considered part of December. After 3 a.m., it's considered part of January. So there's a clock. The double points are actually midnight to midnight, but the casino day is 3 a.m. to 3 a.m. And so most of us, that doesn't matter. But if you did not play in December, because there were two double point days around Christmas time, and it's possible that you were gone for both of them, then this gives you an opportunity for a significant amount of play in December, or whatever you can play in 3 hours. We're going to have new classes at South Point starting Wednesday, January 4th. So it's 6 days from now. They're going to start at noon. We're back in the showroom, which is good. We were in a Grandview Lounge for last semester, but the showroom is a better place for the classes, in my opinion. The classes will be a similar schedule as to what we've had before. We're going to add in this time, though, Jacks Are Better Multi-Strike. And we're taking away Bonus Poker Deluxe this time. So we rotate the classes periodically. We're limited to 10 weeks, and we'll be doing it again near the end of the year, and probably for a short semester at Samstown in the summer. Palms. The Palms has a new senior program. It's going to start next week. They're calling it Sterling Advantage. Now, I recommended they call the club Sexy Seniors to go along with the Palms. They didn't think much of my ideas. Or how about the Wild Bunch? And they didn't think that was very good either. So they're calling it Sterling Advantage. So, and that's on Thursdays. You have to be 50 years or older to take advantage of this. The three of us on this radio show today have that covered with room to spare. The benefits include $4 movie tickets, half off certain menu items at the 24/7 cafe and the buffet. And there will have scratch cards. The scratch cards are, you don't need to play to get it. You just scratch it off, and someone will be drawing entries. There will be a drawing on the last Thursday of the month, and you need to get the only entry tickets for that, as I understand it, are from earlier Thursdays, these scratch cards. The play, earn, and win, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. The themed keep it warm for the first 2 weeks. Keep it warm is, so this could be blankets, it'll be heaters, it'll be things like that. And the second half of the month is called Booze Cruise, which I suspect is going to be a lot of adult beverages that you can earn. And these, you keep your points, and there are extra bonuses. December and November at the Palms did not have any drawings. They're bringing them back. However, They're not the first week of January, so the first time you can play to earn entries for the drawing is January 6th, which is Friday, a week from now. So we'll be telling you more about that drawing in next week's show, but it is coming. Finally, at their buffet, they've recently gone through major upgrades. There are more hot food items now, and a lot of their sauces are prepared fresh rather than from the jar. So if you haven't been in their buffet for a while, you may want to give it a try. All right. So,
December. We're back.
Yeah, December has been the best month to play video poker every year, and it was again this year. I'm not primarily because casinos are trying to buy the players' business. The players are out Christmas shopping or doing whatever they're doing, and they're not coming to Vegas, so the casinos bribe players. So now, with Christmas past, the casinos are getting full again, and so in January, we'll be back to kind of regular Vegas schedule, so the offers are going to go down. So those of you who plan your have a vacation in December and you're a video poker player, that's not a good use of your time. The best deals in Vegas are in December. And so this December is almost over, but there's, with any luck, there's going to be another one coming in about 12 months. And so to plan around it. I've said earlier on several shows that for me, what the true meaning of Christmas was double points at all the casinos. And
I was going to ask, did you put in a 24-hour day collecting your double points?
No, I didn't. I only gambled 18 hours that day. And it isn't particularly relevant, but I came out quite a bit ahead this time. Don't always do that. I pay more attention into how big the opportunity is beforehand in the calculation rather than whether I actually hit Royals on that particular day.
Sure.
So, but Shirley's always happier when I do hit the Royals. And your question, I totally lost what I was going to, I had something I was going to say. I know what it was. So people ask me, how can I be so callous, and it's to, you know, to say things, because there the true meaning of Christmas is family and religion and I don't know, NBA basketball game, something. And so to me, it's like the people who go shopping on Black Thursday, the day after Thanksgiving, or whatever they call the Monday after Christmas, where all the big sales are. This is a... In terms of bargains, this is an intelligent time to go shopping. Now, there are crowds to deal with and there's some problems, but serious shoppers, that's what they do. And the people who are serious about making money playing video poker, they play when the double points are. And
sure. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's all about EV, right? And if that's when the best EV is, then that's when you want to be playing.
And fortunately, I have been able to work out a truce with Shirley that she gets what she wants at many times a year, but on holidays, I get to be in the casino. So every family has to work out its own truce. Your mileage may vary. All right. So, Daryl, let's start talking about what kind of music you do. And we're actually going to we want to start the song in about 7 minutes from now. So we can talk about your music in general a little bit and then the specific introduction to such, but then we're going to go out with that particular song. So that's our time horizon.
So what all right, then.
What kind of music do you play?
Well, I'm a singer-songwriter. I write songs. I play the guitar. I sometimes have a fiddler with me. I've recorded six CDs and a DVD, and I go around the country, you know, singing my songs, usually solo. Sometimes they call me a folk singer. I try to avoid that label, but I can't completely. And so story songs, I still tell stories with my songs.
So
of those stories are regarding gambling, because they're mostly stories about either things that have happened to me or things that I've heard about.
So stories about blackjack, about being chased by the Russian mafia, has that made it into a song? That would be a good song, I would think.
Well, there's one or two that involve that thing. In fact, I think, well, not exactly, but you know, the one we're going to play today, you know, is related to that. Uh-huh. I could tell you where that song came from if you want.
Well, sure.
Well, it's in this category of now it can be told, and it was about 1994, and back then there was no radio show called Gambling with an Edge that taught people what to do and what not to do with large amounts of money and fake IDs. So certainly if I'd had you guys way back then, I probably wouldn't have gotten into the trouble that I had. But it was 1994. I was dating a woman named Amy Beth. She was a lovely woman, worked in a bank, wrote songs. We wrote songs together. We sang to each other. And then I was asked to do a favor for a friend involving a large amount of money and fake IDs, and I did that, and I was caught. And it was my last encounter with the criminal justice system, and 17 years ago. And I actually was sentenced to 3 months in a halfway house. And I was living in Venice, California at the time. The halfway house was in downtown L.A., kind of a seedy part of downtown L.A. And around that time, I just started playing the open mics around L.A., you know, and playing some showcases here and there with my guitar. I'd never really performed a lot, but I reported to this halfway house. You know, I had my suitcase, and I, you know, showed up, nervous and not really knowing what this was going to entail. And I was in my intake meeting, and the woman says, "You know, you can leave here in the daytime if you have a job." And without missing a beat, I said, "Well, I'm a national touring singer-songwriter.
Uh-huh.
I'll have to go home during the day and work on my career." And she said, "Okay." Uh-huh. And so I went home, and I made a career for myself. I became a national touring singer-songwriter, found a booking agent, found a record label, and that's how it all started for me. But later in my stay,
so if you never had to go to jail, you may never have gotten that career. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, quite a silver lining. Oh, yes. Like the silver lining, yes.
Now, would...
And I learned my lesson, you know, about, you know, boundaries with the law, so... Yeah,
well, I mean, there's always a lesson of don't get caught. And so when you do get caught, I really learned the lesson, don't get caught. Now we're there...
No. I really learned the lesson, don't break the law. No need to break the law. There's no need to, you know, I mean... there's plenty of great opportunities in gambling and without risking going to jail. So that's my policy since then.
Very good.
I listen every week to you guys, and I learn, you know, more about what I can and can't do with large amounts of money and fake IDs and stuff. But
And we're learning as well when we get Bob Nersessian on, or Bob Loeb, or I. Nelson Rose, and ask him these questions. It's like we're taking notes as well.
Exactly. So anyway, the final week of that stay, I was in the common area of this halfway house, and a shot rang out, and a guy stumbled into the room, and everybody scattered, and the lights went out, and, you know, I was naive enough to not leave, to think, well, maybe I should help this guy. You know, he's been shot. He was this very large African-American guy who had just come from prison, where he must have been lifting weights every day and had these gold chains on. And, you know, I helped him to this coffee table, and he's laying on this coffee table. And I went to the phone, and I called 911, and they said, "Is the gunman still there?" I said, "I don't know. Is the victim still alive?" And I said, "Yeah, he's writhing on the coffee table over there." And they said, "Well, put some pressure on his wound." And I don't know, you can't make this stuff up. I went over, I pulled this guy's pants down, I put my hand on the dime-sized hole in his right butt cheek to stop the bleeding. And I was there, and with my, you know, blood coming everywhere, and finally the sirens came and the police arrived, and I turn around, and there, standing in front of me, was Amy Beth.
Really?
She had gone to the police academy 6 months earlier. She had become a policeman. She had been working that night and reported to that call. And there I was with blood all over me, and there she was with a badge. And she said, hi. And I said, hi. And so anyway, I wrote this song called Halfway Home. Changed a lot of the details to protect the innocent at that time. And that's how I got the song.
And that's the song we're going to hear tonight.
Yes, one.
All right. So we definitely want. So we are going to fade out with that. So Richard and I are bidding everybody goodbye and hit lots of royal flushes. And let's listen to Daryl's song, Halfway Home. What did you call it?
Halfway Home.
Halfway Home.
Halfway Home. Very good.
Thanks, guys.
Well, I first started hanging with Laura Lee when they took away her father. We'd steal on down to the Five and Dime, where she was no man's daughter. I took her favorite doll from the shelf, 'cause I thought she deserved it. But the next time I passed by the store, I saw that she'd returned it. How I'd look outside my window, stare across the street. She'd wave back, kill the light, settle off to sleep. And I'd feel a hole inside my heart, wish that we were grown. And someday Laura Lee and me would be more than halfway home. Years later, she went off to college, and I went to work for this pawnbroker. And when that didn't pay the rent, I taught myself to play poker. I'd drive up to her dormitory, and I would clean those frat boys out. I'd show her all the money I had won, but I could see she had her doubts. Oh, she'd look outside her window, stare across the street. I'd wave back, she'd kill the light, settle off to sleep. And I'd feel a hole inside my heart, wish that we weren't grown. And oftentimes I'd cry till I was more than when Laura Lee was accepted down at the police academy. Well, I took my luck to the Isle of St. Martin by way of Atlantic City. By the time I'd left, inside my boots I had hidden half a mil. But if the hired goons don't get you, darling, you know U.S. Customs will. Oh, I'd wish I had a window so I could stare across the street. And wish the guards would kill the light so I could get some sleep. And I'd feel...
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.